I'm Rob Kirkup, and this is How Haunted, the paranormal podcast where each episode we explore the horrible history and terrifying ghost stories of one of the scariest places on the planet. In episode 78, you join me in the city of Derby, which is apparently the best place in the world to drink real ale. It's the home of Rolls-Royce, as well, of course, as this episode's location. Dating back to 1756, this place witnessed the very worst of humanity, and as a result, it's believed to be home to all manner of things that go bump in the night. As I'm joined by Richard Felix, who owns this historic landmark, let's ask together, just how haunted is Derby Jail? Listener discretion is advised, as each episode of How Haunted will feature gruesome tales, horrific happenings, bloody murder, and ghosts. So many ghosts. Listen on if you dare. Derby didn't have a jail until 1652, when the Cornmarket Jail was built right in the middle of what was a town at the time. Before that, criminals from Derbyshire were sent to Nottingham Castle. This castle, which we will definitely visit on a future episode of How Haunted, was a terrible place, feared by wrongdoers for its harsh conditions, to the point where it was referred to as Hell on Earth. Cornmarket Jail, with the old spelling of jail, J-A-O-L, was a jail which was not the same as a prison. It was not a place designed to incarcerate prisoners as they served their sentence. This was where they were held before they found out if they'd been found guilty or not of their crime. Despite this, prisoners could be held here for up to 3 months, as verdicts were only delivered 4 times a year, once in the spring, once in the summer, once in the autumn, and once in the winter. It was decided that a less busy area would be better for a new jail, so plans were made to move it to Nuns Green, about 3/4 of a mile west of town. Nuns Green was next to Friargate, a street that has remained well preserved over time. Nuns Green was one of Derby's traditional execution sites, using large trees as gallows before a wooden gallows would be built later. The Nuns Green Jail was constructed using mainly stone from the disused Cornmarket Jail. When it was completed by 1756, it could hold 29 prisoners, but it was later expanded. The cells in all of Derby's jails were very small, and the one at Nuns Green was very dark too, as it was below street level, so it had no windows. Up to 6 people were held in a cell with no segregation. This meant that men who were charged with murder or rape were being held with women and children accused of minor misdemeanours. It could be something as petty as stealing an apple. A lot of people died within the cells of these jails, succumbing to illness, murder, and suicide. Friargate became a very desirable place to live in Derby, and when the townhouses of the wealthy were built next to Nuns Green, the old jail was incorporated into the street, and at this point became known as Friargate Jail. The third and final of Derby's county jails was opened by 1843, just to the south of Friargate on Vernon Street. This was a larger jail called Vernon Street Prison, or the New County Jail, and this spelled the end for Friargate Jail, that largely closed 3 years later in 1846, although some cells were still in use for prisoners condemned to be hanged at Vernon Street Jail. And all over Britain, thousands of people were being hanged. This was largely due to the Bloody Code. The Bloody Code was established in the 17th century and was a series of laws in England, Wales and Ireland that were punishable by the death penalty. By 1689 it numbered 50, but by 1815 this figure had increased to over 220. These ranged from murder and rape, to poaching fish, cutting down a growing tree or stealing cheese. This was partially down to the laws being made by members of Parliament who were all land-owning members of the aristocracy and were fearful of crimes that threatened their property. The best-known executions to have taken place in Derby occurred at the Friars Gate Jail and were that of the Pentrick Martyrs. Jeremiah Brantrith led the Pentrick Revolution, also known as the Pentrick Rising, against the Tory government, with one aim being to wipe out the national debt. The government, anticipating such events, aimed to make an example of participants due to the rising popularity of riots, uprisings and revolutions among the oppressed and easily influenced working class. After a disbanded march on Nottingham started on the 9th of June 1817, the military apprehended the remaining participants, leading to the trial of 35 men for high treason in Derby in October. Jeremiah Brantreth, who was 27, Isaac Ludlam, who was 52, George Waitman, who was 48, and William Turner, who was 46, were all sentenced to be hanged, drawn and quartered. Although Waitman's sentence was later commuted to transportation. However, the Prince Regent showed the three men mercy, and instead, they were hanged and beheaded. Of the 32 who avoided the death penalty, six were jailed, with sentences ranging from 6 months to 2 years, and 14 were transported, 11 for life, and 3 for 14 years. 12 of the men were tried and released. None of those transported returned to England. The three men executed were remembered as the last time an axe was used in an official execution. This occurred on November the 7th, 1817, at Friar's Gate Jail. A gallows was erected at the front of the prison that same morning. The condemned men emerged from the chapel and each placed themselves on a hurdle, and then were individually driven along the prison passage. Brandreth requested to go back along the passage, but he was denied. Standing at the foot of the gallows on Friar Gate, they noticed the bench and block on which the final part of their sentence would be carried out. Three nooses were placed over the beam, and Brantreth, Turner and Ludlam were hanged one by one. The chaplain read separate prayers with each man, and they recited the Lord's Prayer together. After the chaplain left, the executioner pulled hoods over the men's faces. The trap dropped at 12:45 in the afternoon, and the men exclaimed their final prayers. After hanging for 30 minutes, they were cut down. Brantreth's body was laid down on the block and his head was severed by the executioner and displayed to the crowd. Turner and Ludlam's heads were exhibited in the same manner. Their heads and bodies were then interred at dusk at St. Werburgh's Churchyard, No. 1 Friar Gate, Derby. Between the 10th of April 1812 and the 8th of April 1825, 18 executions, including the three Pentrick martyrs, were carried out in public at Friar's Gate Jail. The other 15 who lost their lives here were as follows. On the 10th of April 1812, James Tomlinson, who was 27, and Percival Cook, who was 26, became the first to be hanged on the new drop in front of the county jail. This was for housebreaking. Paul Mason, who was 34, Richard Hibbert, who was 24, and Peter Henshaw, who was 40, were hanged for burglary on the 9th of April 1813. Anthony Lingard, who was 21, was hanged and gibbeted for the murder of Hannah Oliver. This execution took place on the 28th of March 1815. On the 9th of August 1816, Joseph Wealdon, who was 27, was executed and afterwards dissected. This was because he murdered his niece, Mary Ann Wealdon, and his nephew, Isaac Wealdon. On the 15th of August 1817, four men were hanged for arson, having been convicted of setting fire to hay and corn stacks at South Wingfield. The men were John Brown, who was 38, Thomas Jackson, who was 20, George Booth, who was 21, and John King, who was 24. On the 2nd of April 1819, Thomas Hopkinson, who was 20, was hanged for the highway robbery of William Bucknell. On the 22nd of March 1819, 16-year-old Hannah Bocklin was hanged and then afterwards dissected for poisoning Jane Grant. On the 25th of March 1822, Hannah Halley was hanged for the murder of her bastard child, becoming the last woman hanged in Derby and the last to be dissected. On the 8th of April 1825, George Batty, who was 40, became the last person to be hanged at the Friar Gate Jail when he was put to death for the rape of Martha Hawksley, who was just 16. In 1886, Vernon Street Jail was renamed HMP Derby, and then it closed down in 1919. In the same year, it was partly demolished. Once again, they saw convicted prisoners sent to Nottingham, specifically to the Victorian prison's C Wing, which was given the nickname Beirut by locals. Today, the first of Derby's jails, Cornmarket Jail, is gone completely, with no trace of it remaining whatsoever. The area where it once stood is now beneath a pedestrianised part of the city. Vernon Street Jail, which was the third of Derby's jails, may have been partially knocked down in 1919, but for the next decade what remained was used as a military prison. Then in 1930 it was turned into a Greyhound Stadium, which is what it remained as for 58 years, until it closed down on the 7th of December 1988. Today it accommodates apartments and offices. The original jail frontage remains with the words Vernon Gate in the brickwork over the archway, as you can see over on the Instagram at How Haunted Pod. As for Friargate Jail, this is what we now know as Derby Jail, despite being one of three county jails. With its useful life being over long before the end of the 19th century, its purpose was changed countless times. At one point it was the Howard Hotel, and at another point in time it was a nightclub. But this all changed in 1997, when it was bought by a man you are most likely familiar with. And if you aren't, you soon will be. Richard Felix. The old jail is located beneath numbers 50 and 51 Friargate, and was much larger originally than what remains today, although it's believed that facilities of the old prison could be beneath neighbouring properties, lost, for now. Richard had the building restored to replicate how it would have been during its life as a jail, and it has two cells which have the original doors which were rehung. These doors tell their own history, with graffitis and markings left by prisoners of the time. Names, dates and scratches in the wood can be seen. In some cases these are counting down how many days a prisoner had left until they would be executed. The condemned cell is where the prisoner sentenced to death would spend their last night. Rather than face public hanging, some individuals chose to take their own lives. In this room, two brothers once opted for a double suicide, rather than await their scheduled hanging the following morning. Their lifeless bodies were discovered hanging from the ceiling near the door. They breathed their last, facing one another. The door of this room bears graffiti, depicting images of hanging figures. These were drawn by those who faced that very fate the following morning. The debtor cell is named as such because of marks on the inside of the door that refer to money and amounts to be paid. The room known charmingly as the murder room is where the former police museum used to be located, and it's where prisoners were dissected once they'd been hung, declared dead and cut down. In the past, a surgeon resided at 44 Friargate and had unrestricted access to the bodies of deceased prisoners. However, such practices were deeply at odds with religious beliefs of the time, which held that a soul could only find peace in the afterlife if the body remained intact. Dissection, therefore, robbed the deceased of this privilege. It is speculated that these actions contributed to the perceived heightened paranormal activity within Derby Jail. As of course, this place is said to be very, very haunted. It appears that the prisoners themselves being held there all those years ago were afraid of the ghosts of the old jail. This is evidenced in what are described as witch marks, or apothropaic marks, scratched in at the original doors. These marks look like a big letter W, but they are actually two letter Vs close together. These marks stand for the Virgin Mary and are a symbol of fending off evil spirits. That may well have been a long time ago, but nothing's changed, and those visiting today should always be watching, listening, and utilising all of their senses, as many who have came here have experienced activity that can only be described as paranormal, including, as you'll soon hear, Richard Felix himself, who actually saw a ghost there in November of 1999. The jail is regularly booked for paranormal investigations, and occurrences reported at Derby Jail include footsteps being heard in areas that are known to be empty, knocks, chains rattling, and disembodied voices. Doors have opened and slammed shut all on their own. A display dummy was witnessed gently swaying backwards and forwards before being forcefully thrown across the floor. Those in and around the debtor's cell have described the overpowering scent of flowers. In some cases, this has been accompanied by an overwhelming feeling of sadness, despair, and hopelessness. Thankfully, it, as well as the fragrance of flowers, vanish as quickly as they appear. The ghostly cat has been seen and heard, as of man-shaped shadowy figures seen moving swiftly inside and outside of the jail. One visitor claimed to have seen the ghostly figures of two men hanging from a beam in the condemned cell. Then before their very eyes, the figures just dissolved away to nothing. Derby Jail was brought to the attention of the public on August the 27th, 2002, when it appeared in the first series of Living TV's Most Haunted. A 24-hour investigation by the team produced some compelling results. And it was Most Haunted that also brought the jail's owner, Richard Felix, into the public's consciousness as he appeared in over 120 episodes of the smash hit British Paranormal Show in his capacity as a paranormal historian. 2002, the year Most Haunted began, was also the year I organised and conducted my first ever paranormal investigation, so I absolutely lapped up this new TV programme, which was like nothing we'd seen before. Understandably, I was beyond excited when Richard agreed to join me as a poltergeist, to have a chat with me about Derby Jail, as well as all manner of other aspects of the paranormal, including his personal beliefs as to what ghosts might be, and of course we go deep into his time on Most Haunted, how it began, how it ended, and everything in between. Let's hear what he had to say. I am truly, I'm really excited, and I'm truly honoured to have a chance to chat with Richard Felix, who is a historian, ghost hunter, and author. And as we were just chatting before I pressed record, I first became familiar with your work by watching Living TV's Most Haunted, where, as I saw on your website earlier today, you appeared in over 120 episodes.
Oh, yeah. Wow. God help me. Yeah.
120 episodes.
20 lives. Some of them, you know, we started off with one night, and then it progressed to seven nights, which was, whatever. It's tremendous. People loved it. I mean, it was a phenomenon. We got more viewers than The Simpsons, and love the programme, hate the programme or anything else. It's created more debate, more argument, more discussion, and more research than any ghost programme ever has. And before Most Haunted came on, what was the Strange But True? Michael Aspel. That was good, that was. That was really good. It was a bit documentary type, but there was nothing like Most Haunted.
No.
And everything that's on now, to be very honest with you, is based on Most Haunted, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, everyone's playing at Most Haunted.
Yeah, exactly. And as I was saying just before I pressed the record button, and if I think back to my own experiences around that time, people at work, like I'd not long graduated from university and I was in a job at the time and people were coming into work and saying, oh, did you see Most Haunted last night? And people were having conversations about the paranormal who maybe would have shied away from it beforehand because it wasn't so accepted to believe in there being something else going on. I mean, I did my first investigation purely coincidentally. It's Halloween 2002. Because of a local radio station up here who did like a special Halloween episode for years. But I'd watched a lot of I think if I hadn't been watching so much Most Haunted, perhaps I wouldn't have put my name forward to go for it. And I wouldn't be here talking to you this evening. But around the same time I was watching you on Most Haunted, I also picked up one of your Ghost Tour of Great Britain DVDs, which was the Northeast Ghost one. I think I might have bought it. Chillingham Castle, you know, and I watched that over and over and over again. I think I had the Haunted Castles one as well.
So oh dear,
it's honestly real bucket list territory chatting to you this evening. So thank you so much for doing it.
Crumbs. But I mean, the fascinating thing about Most Haunted all this started with me about 31 years ago when I started organizing ghost walks, and I'll be honest with you, if I was sat in a pub with 30 odd people on a walk and I asked how many people here have seen a ghost or heard or sensed or felt or whatever, I probably have 3 or 4, possibly very, very gingerly put my hands up. But now, doing the same thing, if I said, right, how many people here have same old seen, heard, spent? Oh God, I will get 12, 15. But it doesn't mean people are seeing ghosts more.
No.
It means people are prepared to admit it more.
Yeah.
Or talk about it. And I would say basically because of Most Haunted.
Yeah, and I mean, another thing while we're talking, which has just popped into my head, I think is, I remember when in 2003, I did a paranormal investigation, ghost hunt, call it what you will, at the Castle Keep in Newcastle, which I know was an early Most Haunted as well, because obviously I'm local to the area, and it cost, I got in touch with the castle and said, oh, hiya, Me and two of my friends want to come along and do a ghost hunt. Is that all right? And they said, yeah, pay us £10 each. And you can come in and
No.
that's how much it costs, £10 each. And you can come in and spend a few hours. Yeah, no problem at all.
Oh, come
Now,
on.
not long after that, all of these companies popped up doing organized paranormal investigations because there was so much demand for it, which just didn't exist before. And now, I mean, it's big business. I did an investigation at the Lytton Phil in Newcastle in January, and it was sold out.
Right.
It was
Oh,
a
yeah. I know.
horrible, horrible Saturday evening in January, just after New Year. And
Yep.
there was, I think it was about 25 people there, something like that. So
Yeah.
I do think
It's
that
huge.
Ghost Haunted paved the way for
They have.
this. I wouldn't be doing this podcast, I don't think, if it
No,
wasn't
no, no.
for
And
Ghost Haunted, because people wouldn't listen to it.
it's created ghost tourism. People are, for years now, I've spoken to people that actually travel the country visiting the sites that were almost haunted. Why not? What's wrong with it? Nothing wrong with it at all. Absolutely nothing wrong with it whatsoever.
My favorite bit of Most Haunted, and I think I said this in the email that I sent you and asked you if you'd be kind enough to
Yeah.
come on, was always your bit, because I was fascinated by the history of places and the way that it often connected to some of the ghost stories and, dare I say, some of the folklore around the place. And it's that's still the fascination that I've got now. I mean, I've written books on places in the northeast of England, and as
Right.
well, I've done one about York, and I've done one about Edinburgh as well. But I have focused largely on the northeast because, I mean, that's where I am, and why would I venture too far away from here when I've got Northumberland, Newcastle,
Oh, come on,
Sunderland?
you're surrounded.
Yeah,
You're surrounded
I'm
by it.
spoiled up here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm obsessed with all of that kind of stuff, and somebody did get in touch with us by email and fairly ask us why I hadn't covered somewhere in Derby yet, and.
All right.
Yeah, and I mean, I haven't. It's always been on my to-do list, and one of the places that I did want to cover was Derby Jail, which is
Well, you
why.
must come. You must come. It's. I have a phrase. Nobody leaves Derby Jail disappointed. Funnily enough, what you were saying about the history, but you see, I'm interested in the history that created the ghost.
Yeah.
I can't prove the ghost,
No.
but I can prove the history that created it. And that's what, like you were saying, I believe makes it so fascinating if you can tie in why the ghost is there, what happened to the ghost, the history as to what happened to that ghost that's kept it here or caused it to visit or whatever. And that's the bit that I know is that's where I come in, because it's fascinating to know who they were. We need to know who they were and what happened to them that caused them to be here. And why are they grey? Why aren't they pink, blue, green, or yellow? Oh, and by the way, what can we do for them? Hey, what is it? It was a ghost. So what, it was a person. What, it was a human being that shouldn't actually be here. They're stuck, trapped for a reason. Some of them aren't. Some of them are here because they want to be. But that's what I think it makes it so much more fascinating if you can tell the history behind, tell their story, basically.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, some of the episodes that I've done over the last, if I think back just across the last year, like me big Halloween special last year was I did the ghost of Jack the Ripper's Whitechapel and delving in
Oh.
the horrible, horrible history of what happened there. And then I went to Whitechapel and spent like an evening walking around some of the Ripper murder sites, and it really, really was quite harrowing. Ah, having an awareness of what happened there, and then people are walking around oblivious, just getting on with their everyday life.
Oh, yeah, no.
And yeah, and then for Bonfire Night, I did the many haunts of Guy Fawkes and really digging into his life and looking at the places that he's believed to haunt now and his connection to them. And in some cases, a very tenuous connection to them. Again, was very eye-opening and really made us think about why is there so many places that Guy Fawkes is meant to haunt? Can somebody be in multiple places? These are all
Well,
questions that.
look at Mary Queen of Scots.
Exactly.
I mean, my God Almighty! I mean, she haunts. The fascinating thing about that one is that she actually haunts every building, every place that she was held, imprisoned, apart from the place where she was executed, Fotheringay Castle. There's no ghost story whatsoever to do with the castle. There is to do with some of the building that was moved when the building was demolished, slighted, but the actual site of this tragic, awful death that she had, three blows to take off her head, no, she's not there. But you see, here we go. This is I'm a huge believer. Well, you probably know I'm a huge believer in what I refer to as stone tape theory.
Yeah.
Recordings that are held in the fabric of the building. Usually trauma, but not necessarily. It doesn't have to be trauma. It can be any energy type of event that takes place. But what I think, in her case especially, someone that's charismatic, energy, extra, and you meet someone and you say, they left a real impression on me. Well, do you not think that that person can also leave a real impression on the surroundings where she was? And that leaves, for want of a better word, some form of imprint or recording in the fabric of the building where she was. Hence the fact she haunts every damn place that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a possibility. I don't know.
No. We probably never will know.
Of course not. Well, let's not prove it too quick.
No.
Because we'll all be out of a job.
Yeah, that's true. That's true enough.
We'll all be on to aliens then instead. But you know, I mean, as I've said so often, there is no proof that ghosts exist.
No.
I mean, none. You know, I can't prove, you can't prove to me, I can't prove to you or to anybody else. Don't matter whether I've seen a ghost, I've travelled with a ghost, I've heard a ghost, I've experienced a poltergeist. Blah, 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 blah. I can't prove it. I can tell you, but yeah. I can't prove it to you. But guess what? There's also no proof that they don't exist.
That's true enough. And you make a good point, because, I mean, I've been asked questions, and I've done a couple of like Q&A episodes of the podcast where people have said, like, do you believe, do you not believe? And I think I've talked about this so on the podcast a few times, but I've experienced a few things that I simply can't explain, but I've never seen, like, I've done many, many investigations and I've never seen a ghost. I've never witnessed anything that resembles a traditional, what you would call ghostly figure or anything like that. And one of the reasons why I do it is because I need my own proof. I get quite a lot of emails of people who I don't know telling us what they've experienced. And I mean, I did a listener story episode of Christmas, which went down really well. And it was a good episode because it had a lot of variation and a lot of quite terrifying tales, to be honest. But that's their proof. Yeah. That's not mine. With most things in life, everything's very black or white. You know, with this, there's some people who do believe, there's some people who don't believe, and there's some people who were very much in the middle.
Are you on the fence?
I can't think of anything else like ghosts that would drive that level of, other than maybe aliens, as you mentioned, that would drive that level of debate and uncertainty, because most other things in life are
black and white.
Yeah, completely black or white, and you can prove that they exist one way or another.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, so many ghosts are grey, aren't they?
yeah.
Including one I saw, you know, greyest thing I've ever seen. I always refer to it as being so distinctly grey.
Where was that at?
Dog's out. Dog's Gale. 20 past three on a Friday afternoon. Broad daylight. You know, I was on the phone talking to somebody. I wasn't ghost hunting. I wasn't asking anything to happen or anything. It just glided down the corridor past me. It's the most real looking ghost that you can ever imagine to see. It looked like a ghost. It wasn't male, it wasn't female, it wasn't clothed, it was grey, it was a haze, but I couldn't see through it. It was dense, and it was sort of person-shaped.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And me being I refer to myself as Mr. Credible, tries to give rational explanations and ticks the normal boxes first, has ticked every normal box. And I'm still ticking them now, I'm still trying to disprove it. But I can't. I've only got one explanation. I saw a ghost in broad daylight at 20 past three on a Friday afternoon. You know, but I can't prove it to anybody.
No, but I mean that's your own proof, isn't it? And I mean
Oh, yeah.
I'd give anything to see something like that. And maybe one day I will, but of course I don't own a historic building
No, it
like a
helps.
good self. Yeah, I can imagine it does help.
There's no doubt it helps. But when I say that, I mean, there's only two things. Oh, come on, I hear things. We get footsteps and we hear a door and we want to see who's there and there isn't anybody. But I mean, that's all. Oh, you know, it could be anything on the anything. It could be the wind. It could be this.
Yeah.
It could be that. You know, there are things like that.
Talking about Derby Jail, I read
Yes.
on your website that it was a place that you bought before Most Haunted started in
Oh,
97, and that
yeah.
it was then restored, ensuring that it mirrored closely how it would have been like when it was a jail in its working life.
Basically, for years, it was a jail from 1756. It was a jail, not a prison. You know, you were only kept until trial, so it liked being on remand at the for 3 months at the most, until you know, one of four trials a year, the assizes took place, and then punishment was meted out on you, and that was being whipped at the cart's tail till your back be bloody, branded on the palm of your hand with a letter T for thief, transportation or execution. 56 people executed. The last beheading in Great Britain with an axe took place in front of Derby Jail on November the 7th, 1817. Hey, a beheading in provincial England, Derby, England's last revolution, the last sentence of hanging, drawing, and quartering in provincial England. So it's got a pedigree, I'll tell you. It's a good place. It really is.
I mean, as I said at the beginning, I'm going to have to make sure
You
that I
must.
get there.
Yeah.
I definitely will. It's on my list of places to
That's
go.
great.
A bit like people going off and doing most haunted journeys, I want to try and visit the places that I cover on the
Yeah,
episodes.
absolutely.
So, yeah, definitely.
No, it was a good one. It was a belting program. It was the first time, actually, that anything that I know genuinely happened was when the cross, they put a wooden cross on one of the wooden beds. It was an original prison bed, jail bed, from 1700 and on. And they put it on a piece of paper. You may have seen it, but they put it on a piece of paper and sketched around the
Oh,
cross.
yeah.
And during the night it moved. And it did. And it wasn't moved. I was there all night, so I know full well that that set prison cell was out of bounds. Nobody went in, and it really didn't. They went bonkers, because remember, I wasn't on it. You know, I was there,
Yeah.
but I was just the person, the proprietor, and a witness. So I wasn't part of the show, particularly, and so I was watching all the time. You know, so that was, and they were over the moon by the whole thing. It's almost the first time that they had what I believe to be now a genuine paranormal thing happen, you know. But it was so small, it was oh, tiny little bit that it moved. And I
Yeah.
thought, is that it? Is that as good as it gets? You know, but they were over the moon about it. They were clapping, patting each other on the back and shaking hands and jumping up and down. Wow, okay.
I mean, even moving something like that, though, how would it happen if nobody went in there? I mean, I've done
No,
it
exactly.
before, like setting up trigger objects where I've drawn around things and 99 times out of 100
Nothing
they
happens.
don't do anything. I mean, I've done
No.
investigations in hotels where I've been able, like, I've had a room keys to a few rooms of being able to do something like that, lock the room, no, nobody's going to go in the hope, beyond all hope, that when you go in, something has moved, and generally it never ever it doesn't. So
No.
something like that, I can imagine.
That did.
I'd be over the moon if that was.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's where we leave it for this episode, but trust me, there's a lot more to come. You don't want to miss part two, where you'll hear the remainder of my chat with Richard Felix. You can follow How Haunted on Twitter at HowHauntedPod, or over on Instagram at HowHauntedPod, where you will see photos galore relating to Derby Jail. If you want to get in touch, you can do so by visiting the website at www.how-haunted.com, or you can email me at rob@how-haunted.com. If you'd like to support the show, you could sign up for one of three Patreon tiers. They start at as little as £1. You can get early ad-free access to episodes and a monthly bonus episode where I conduct a paranormal investigation, talking you through the history, the ghost stories, and what happened on the night itself. This is interspersed with audio from the ghost hunt. What's more, there's a free 7-day trial at the £3 tier, so you could get access right now to April's special episode, in which you'll join me at Preston Tower. Then there are all of the other special episodes, which include the big Halloween special at the Golden Fleece in York, Dalhousie Castle Hotel, the York Dungeon, Bedlam Theatre, Kielder Castle, the Lytton Phil, the Dean Court Hotel, and the 48 hours I spent in the company of a haunted doll. You can also get yourself some exclusive How Haunted merch, including a mug and a t-shirt. Find out more at patreon.com/howhauntedpod. If you'd like to support the show but you aren't a fan of Patreon, why not donate a couple of pounds to help with the admin side of the podcast? You can do this at buymeacoffee.com/howhauntedpod. All the information and links on how you can do this are in the podcast episode description. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please consider leaving a review on your podcast provider of choice. It'll only take you a couple of minutes, and it really does help other people to find How Haunted. Next time out, we return to Derby Jail, and I continue my interview with Richard Felix, including why he left Most Haunted, his opinion on paranormal TV programmes in general, and of course, we discuss Derby Jail in far more detail, including his own incredible experiences there. Let's find out all about it together next episode, when we ask for the second and final time, just how haunted is Derby Jail? Thank you so much for accompanying me for our paranormal adventures once again. Stay safe, and join me next time, when we will once again ask the question, how haunted?